This is Mind Shift. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, your fellow traveler along this road of deconstruction and discovery. I'm coming to you doing this podcast today on Bank Holiday Monday. I woke up this morning and shockingly surprised there was 2 inches of snow here on the rock. And I'm just hoping that I don't get snowed in like I did the last time we had a major storm. We were trapped for literally 7 days. So this is a crazy late storm here in the United Kingdom. I got up this morning to let the dog outside and there's snow all over the place. So I thought, what better to do than to work on this week's podcast? Today's episode features part 2 with Dana Stinson. If you listened to last week's episode, and I'm telling you right now, if you haven't heard it, you need to go back and listen to it. In fact, you have to listen to it because this episode today really doesn't make sense without listening to part 1. Last week, we heard Dana telling her story about growing up in the evangelical church, the Salvation Army, both of her parents being pastors, all the while struggling with this issue of gender identity, gender dysphoria. And basically, what gender dysphoria is, it's basically a condition feeling that your emotional, your psychological identity as male or female to be the opposite of your biological gender. And on top of all of the issues that she struggled with growing up was, of course, the teachings of the church, which they said it was wrong, it was sick, it was perverted to be having these feelings. And so, like many kids today are told, you've got to pray it away or pray the gay away, as it were. And so we heard the story. Now, this week's episode picks up where we left off last week, and I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that in a minute. I just want to say real quickly before we get to the chat with Dana, that there's a couple of different ways you can get a hold of me. Probably the easiest way is to find me, follow me on Twitter at MindShift2018. And I'm going to put other links, as I always do, in the show notes. And of course, if you want to support this show on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/MindShiftPodcast. You can also support the show through Podbean. You can also buy a t-shirt on TeePublic. And again, these links are in the show notes. The other thing, too, I just want to mention real briefly is that I'm going to be putting Dana's contact information in the show notes as well, her website, as well as her Twitter handle. So if you want to get a hold of Dana, you can do that, too, by looking in the show notes. Now, just before we get into the conversation, there's something I've been reflecting on this week as I was going back and listening to last week's episode, the first half with Dana, and that is, you know, maybe most of us don't know a transgender person, and I think this is a big part of the problem, not just in the church, but just generally within society. And that's why I'm trying to do is bringing you this conversation with Dana, among other things, as I talk about in the show, the idea of critical thinking, learning to think critically is about being exposed to other points of view that you may or may not be familiar with. And you may not know a trans person, but now you've met one. As I said, you've met Dana, or at least heard her story. And if we can sit down at the table and just listen to someone else's point of view, listen to someone else's frame of reference, and respectfully just listen and hear what she has to say, then maybe we can gain just a little bit more understanding. I talked a little bit about the latest attempt by President Trump to ban trans people from serving in the military. And I mentioned that the problem, of course, is that just by passing legislation, although it may appease his base and so forth, isn't necessarily going to bring people together across this divide. And we see this certainly in American culture, that across just the political spectrum, the religious spectrum, whatever spectrum you want to put in there, there's a deep, incredible division. The polarization is just unbelievable. And we've gone from having perhaps more, we can have an angry discussion even about differences in politics and religion and whatever. Now we're just attacking the other side. We're vilifying, we're demonizing the other side. And I don't see how we can get that together other than what I'm doing with this show. And that is, as I say, by sitting down essentially at the table with a person like Dana and just listening to her story. And if nothing else, you can go, this is an unbelievable story. What would you feel like? I mean, most of us listening, I'm sure, when you walk out of your house in the morning and go down the street, like you're going to work or going to get in your car, do you have abuse hurled at you by people, just random strangers on the street? When's the last time you struggled to get a job, just to pay your bills? just because of your gender. The only thing that I can even think of that even comes close to these kind of things is perhaps someone who's had experiences as a person of color. Maybe they've had abuse hurled at them. Maybe they've been denied employment or other benefits in life because of their color, just simply the color of their skin. Well, I had the opportunity to play in a band with a good friend of ours now. Her name's Kate, and she's in this transition as well. She's come out as a trans woman. And, you know, I remember meeting Kate probably about 5-6 years ago. We needed a bass player in our band, and our lead singer said, well, I know someone who's a bass player. Now, she's a really good bass player. So, and this is her style of music. It was like real heavy rock covers and almost like heavy metal type stuff. This is totally up her street. But you need to know she is transgender. Is that going to be a problem? And we were like, well, can she play bass? Is she a good bass player? Yeah, she's a really phenomenal bass player. And I remember when Kate came out to audition with the band, she was really nervous and everything. But, you know, she absolutely nailed it. And we said, hey, you know, you can play. You want to be in the band? Let's go ahead and get you in the band. You're a good bass player. Why should the gender issue even come into the equation? She's just a phenomenal bass player. And, you know, over the years of playing with Kate in the band and getting to know her a little bit, heard stories from Kate about how she would come out of her house in the morning and there were neighborhood kids that would just hurl terrible abusive statements to her just because she was a trans woman and she was apparently different and she was, you know, they were afraid of her or angry at her or whatever it was. And I remember over the years how she struggled just trying to land a basic job, even just at a gas station, a petrol station, any sort of low-level entry job. She couldn't land a job. And of course, these employers, after she had these interviews, they would never say to her, well, I'm not going to hire you because you're a transgender woman and I don't want you representing my business. But of course, we knew that was why she didn't get the gig. And, you know, it's hard to watch someone like that who's a friend of yours, who's just trying to get along in life, as most of us are, just trying to pay her bills and just, you know, get some fuel in the car just to get around. These are just normal things. And she struggled getting that together. And, you know, one of the good things that I was able to do is I was able to introduce Kate with Dana and put them together on Facebook, because now Kate does a lot of education for the LGBT community. And so I thought, this is really good. We need to get Kate and Dana together so they become friends on Facebook. And I just thought that was something cool to do. Now, one of the things I want to remind you before we get into this chat with Dana in just a minute, where did the show end last week? I kind of left you on a cliffhanger. If you remember, Dana was talking about her formulation of this kind of game plan to come out and say to people, or at least her spouse at the time, the first person that she told that she was in process here and she was going to be doing this transition. And she came home from a long business trip and sent this email to her spouse. And the first words out of her mouth were, are you going to leave me? And this is where the story picks up this week. She's having this conversation with her spouse. Her spouse is convinced that now, because she's told her this information and what's going to happen next, the first thing that Dana's going to do is leave. And also, if you remember, Dana and her spouse were quite heavily involved in leadership at their local church. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what happened when those two worlds began to collide. What, you can't keep this a secret forever, obviously. There's physical changes that were happening. And so what happens then? It's funny, too, because something Dana said to me last week when the episode came out, she said two things. She said, one thing, your introduction was freaking amazing. And she said, number two, she said, holy shit, do I talk a lot. But you know what? I'm glad to step aside and let Dana just talk. And that's what basically this episode is, just Dana's story. And so let's go on into part number two of Coming Out in a Hostile World with Dana Stinson.
She thought I was going to leave her. And I'm thinking to myself going, I've already left one marriage. And I know the pain and the hurt that I dealt with, that my oldest child dealt with. And I know it wasn't easy on my former spouse. And I said, I can never let that happen again. And the only words out of my mouth was, no, I have no desire to. I just, for the first time in my life, want to be the best person that I could possibly be. As the conversation went on for a little while, the thing that came out of my mouth would be something that would kind of set kind of the groundwork for even where I'm at today. And I said to my spouse, as long as we will be okay, I will give you all the time in the world you need to come to grips with this. And I kind of stuck to that promise. A few months later, for those who are listening who really aren't familiar with what happens a lot with people who come out as transgender, the path is different for everybody. For me, I knew the next step in my, what they call transition, which if you look at the medical side of things. And so my mental health professional agreed that it would be right for me to seek out a doctor who specialized in the medical side of what they would call transitioning. So I met with a doctor once again, you know, after going long, you know, many weeks of therapy with this, you know, mental health professional, having been interviewed and going everything with a physical, you know, with a physician, they agreed the proper course of action for me would be to start, you know, hormone replacement therapy. And we have talked about the words of gender dysphoria, and I can pretty much simplify it as if you would take your shoes, take your left shoe, put it on your right foot, take your right shoe and put it on your left foot and walk around. That uncomfortable feeling that you would have is pretty much what I've dealt with all my life. And as I started digging into more and more what I felt this way, I learned there was a lot of things that were happening that were established even before I was born. And basically my brain chemistry, you know, the hormonal structure of my brain is completely different than the hormonal structure of my physical body. So I was born with the body of a male, but I was born with the brain of a female. And the American Psychological Association, the American Medical Association, you know, says you can't really change the rewiring of the brain. And so the proper course of action is to bring the body in congruence with the brain. So, you know, here I am, you know, getting a sign off from my physician, from my therapist, that I should start hormone replacement therapy. And, you know, even the day before, I went to my wife and I said, if you do not think this is what I should do, you tell me now and I'll walk away. Just like I did when I first came out, you know, to my therapist, to my spouse. And every step of the way, I was being affirmed. Now, throughout all of this, Clint, nobody in my life knew what was happening. My spouse knew, my best friend knew. Brought on my, I call her my one of my closest friends through the years. I call her my sister. She's probably, you know, she's known me longer than anybody. You know, I eventually brought her on board, but nobody in my life knew what was going on, because here I am, you know, the child of two pastors. I live in a conservative world. The very concept of who transgender people were starting to be known a little bit more. So you're starting to see a lot of the backlash from the evangelical right wing type of church. So I hid this from everybody. I started hormone therapy and nobody knew. I couldn't tell my employer. I was afraid. So, you know, here I am not only as scared about what's going on in my own world, you know, I'm worried about how my spouse is handling this. I don't know what my job is going to think, because in the state of Pennsylvania, there are no anti-discrimination laws. And so I could be fired just because of who I am. And so here I am. I'm absolutely scared shitless about what's going on. So I kind of laid low. And as I'm starting hormone therapy, you know, this means, you know, I need to reduce the amount of testosterone in my body. It introduces estrogen into my body. And I started noticing right away some mental clarity in my life I had never felt before. I'm telling you, it was absolutely bizarre, but here I am. I'm still in church. I'm still in the worship band. I'm still on the church board. I'm still teaching the kids and everything's going along. And over the course of the next 6 months, my physical appearance starts changing just ever so slightly. And it already shocked people that the beard was gone. Here I am. I got my ears pierced. But everybody just thought, you know, here's this Stinson person. Stinson's a rebel. This is typically what Stinson would do. But yet, as all this was going on, I'm starting wrestling those internal demons that were going on inside my brain. I'm still thinking I'm this conservative Christian transgender woman, and I could have all of my cake and eat it too. And at the 6 month mile marker, everything was going well until the wheels fell off.
They always do, it seems like. It's one of those things where it's going to catch up with you eventually, isn't it? You can't possibly keep all this a secret forever. So what happened then in the end? The wheels, how did the wheels fall off?
Well, I'm on the road for work. I'm on the other side of Pennsylvania. And I'm being told, your daughter wants to have a video chat with you. And this would be the oldest one. And all of a sudden, over this video chat, my oldest daughter says to me, Daddy, why do you like to wear girl clothes? Now, I thought I was being pretty discreet with this. I guess I wasn't as much as I could, but somehow my daughter knew a little bit of what was going on. At that point in time, the wheels fell off. I'm not only having to confront my daughter, I'm having to talk to her mother about this, the one person that I didn't really want to talk to. I was absolutely afraid of telling my daughter because I was afraid of losing my daughter. I didn't know how my former spouse would react. I had no idea because that was what I was afraid of more than anything in the world. And so I'm not only dealing with that, I'm dealing with my daughter knowing, I'm dealing with my former spouse knowing. It started to put me into this horrible depression. And now I'm realizing I'm going to have to face my pastor. I'm going to have to go to the pastor of my church and tell him everything that's happening.
And you're not going to necessarily get a warm reception. You're thinking this, they're not going to be accepting of what's going on in your life, this transition. So what happened? You had to go to the board. You had to go to the pastor.
I had to go to the pastor. I invite the pastor and his wife over to my house, and I start to tell them, I give them a little bit of the backstory of what was happening. And the first question out of their mouth is, are you gay? I'm like, no, I'm married to my spouse. I'm happy. This is not what this is about. Were you abused as a child?
Right,
no,
so that's
I was
where they
never
went.
Physically abused as a child. They had asked me, did you go see a Christian therapist? And I'm looking in the face going, hell no.
Why
actually
would I
want
that?
A therapist who actually knows what they're talking about. You know, and in this 6 months, I started digging into the Bible. I started digging into commentaries. I remember having an email battle with someone that focused on the family, you know, and they're like, no, this is wrong. This is not God's design. I'm looking at commentaries that people are digging into some of, you know, the Hebrew culture and stuff like this and whatever. And I'm finding for the first time in my life that the Bible says nothing about what I'm going through is wrong. And so I'm starting to build this sense and peace. And as I'm being told, did I go to a Christian therapist? I'm like, no, because a Christian therapist would go up to that line and say, you should never go over there. You should never cross over into this line. But I wanted a therapist to say, well, let's talk about what's over on that line. Let's talk about real scientific, psychological data. But then here was the line that kind of started it all. I looked at my pastor dead in the eye, and I told him, if you challenge me spiritually on this, I'm going to hand you your lunch.
So you had enough biblical training, and you'd been doing your homework in a sense. So you're saying to this guy, don't go there.
And that's it. And he's looked at me going, well, I really don't know much about this. And I'm like, and you won't.
You wouldn't.
Know as much about this as I, you wouldn't. So
why
he needed some time to think. And he comes back to me a week or so later and says, well, I've made a decision. I'm going to ask that you step down from the church board. You're going to write a letter saying you're going to step down, quote unquote, for a season. I'm going to ask that you step away from the worship band. I'm going to ask that you discontinue your ministry of teaching the older children, but I don't want you to tell anybody. Can you imagine that?
That's unbelievable. Although actually it isn't unbelievable. Sadly, it's not unbelievable. Coming from their point of view, they can't have a person like you in their church.
That's right. But I was allowed to sit in the congregation. Christmas time was coming, the time where I'm leading all these musical groups and I'm just having to sit there. you know, the worship band would go up and, you know, here I am still sitting at church. It got some times where the anger that was welling up with me, welling up inside of me, was ridiculous. But yet, this same pastor, still, you know, in March of 2016, they were like, well, we still want you to go to Cuba with us because I'm also a photographer, because they wanted me to go and take pictures. So that aided in my anger. And it got to the point where, you know, when the worship band would go up, I'd leave the room. I'd go stand out in the back. And I'm just like, and the anger started building and building and building. And all the time, this pastor's telling me, you know, I think Satan, you know, I think this is Satan's doing. And I'm, you know, here I am. I'm trying to tell this pastor for the first time in my life, I feel complete and whole. And then there's the bullshit. Well, maybe Satan's doing it to get around you and affect somebody else. And I'm looking at him going, are you kidding me? He would come back with all these different things and I'd shut him down at every given time. And I'm like, no. He's like, well, what about the verse if it causes someone to stumble? I'm like, if it causes someone to stumble, well, God damn it, they need to go learn about this and find out what this is. Because if they're stumbling, it's because they don't know what the heck I'm dealing with. For the course of the next couple months, there were a few things that were happening throughout all of this. My strength and my confidence started building. You know, here it is, you know, we're talking 2016. And I was still on occasion checking out some of those right-wing Fox News, Breitbart websites, and I was curious to see what they had to say about transgender people. And there was an article I read on one of the sites that talked about in the transgender community, there's like a 40% suicide rate. And I did the one thing you were never supposed to do. I read the comments. And in one of the comments, somebody said, hey, it's like a self-cleaning oven. I lost it. I'm literally replying back, what the hell is wrong with you people? I bet you are the people who sit there on a Sunday raising your hands on high saying he is Lord of all. But I came back, why don't you just admit it? He's Lord of all who look like you, act like you, and think like you. And I'm like, you know, you might as well give me your name so I could worship you, because clearly the Bible says he who is without sin, let me cast the first stone. So clearly you are without sin, so I guess I'm going to worship you. But right there, I knew that I could no longer call myself a conservative. So throughout all of this, you know, a little bit of an ideological change was starting to happen as well. I knew that I couldn't embrace this conservative life that I was leading. It was kind of countering everything that I was. How could I be this and yet be with people who are hating exactly who I am? And I started building in confidence. You know, I'm starting to, as much as I, you know, as I first told my pastor, I says, well, this is about the inside. The pastor actually, in one of our conversations, shed light of some ministry that the Church of the Nazarene had that dealt with the LGBT community. And here I am thinking, oh, yeah, you know, it's one of these clobber ministries. They'll sucker you in and try to, you know, and try to convert you. You know, that whole typical conversion therapy stuff. And, you know, we'll talk about that shortly. But as I started learning more about this ministry, I'm finding this is not the case. I was able to kind of put myself in contact with, I think she called herself either the executive pastor or one of the executive directors. And we started talking. And the first words out of her mouth was, you are doing nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong about you. The Church of the Nazarene and all their these and thou has nothing to say about those who are transgender and struggling with gender identity. You are as God created. And as I shared with her my story, she actually turned to me and said, I have never come across somebody who has put as much thought into something as much as you have. Because here I am dealing with my pastor. I'm dealing with the assistant pastor at the church who is calling me selfish, who is calling me all these things. And at the time, I even came out to my own parents, and I have my own mother sending me an email saying, you're selfish. You're not thinking about your family. You're not thinking about your extended family. And then my mother says the line, let me put my pastor hat on for a moment. And in the time where I'm trying to reach out to my mother, I get, let me put my pastor hat on. And my response was, and I will say this plain as day, you can bleep me if you want, I don't care about your fucking job. I need a parent right now.
I just need a mother right now. Forget a pastor.
I need a mother who's going, Exactly. I had a pastor, an assistant pastor, who had already just like, were already guilting me into what I was dealing with. I needed the unconditional love of a parent. And I was slowly learning what that was because of, I'm finding that I didn't get that unconditional love through my parents and, you know, all the issues that I've had with them over the years and seeing their lacking of being grandparents and their lacking as being parents. I was thinking that part of my transition, I felt that God laid it upon me that here is the time to really work on the internal, focus on the relationship. So I was really trying to patch the relationship with my parents. And as much as people told me, don't come out to them, don't tell them, I did, thinking maybe this would be the catalyst that would bring my parents around. But nope, here's my mom. Let me put my pastor hat on. So as you can see, other than this one pastor who I had never met, and I still have yet to meet her face to face to this day, saying, there is nothing wrong with you. And she, this person, she would challenge me. She would say, why are you doing this? And I've never had someone call me out on the carpet the way this person did. You know, why are you hiding? Why do you feel guilty? Are you doing something wrong? And I go, no. Then she says, then why do you feel this way? And I said, but this is all I've ever been taught to feel.
There's that conflicted nature in there, isn't it? If all you've been taught is this is wrong, this is against the Bible, this is against God, of course you're going to feel terrible about yourself.
Absolutely right. And so as this time's going, you know, as this time is going on, you know, I'm starting to feel a little bit more comfortable about the external side of me. And I'm trying to make that presence note of, you know, I'm trying to establish that new life. I'm still blessed. I still have my spouse with me. And at the time, you know, this is almost a year from the time of coming out to my wife. And my wife has yet to tell anybody in her life of what was happening.
I was amazed that she didn't tell anybody. But was she respecting kind of your desires or just didn't want to talk about it?
It came out finally at the end, you know, about a year later, she finally told one of her closest friends. And as I asked her about this conversation, she actually came out to me and said, I thought it was a phase. I actually thought you coming out and everything you did in that first year. Now, I didn't really come out as a typical transgender person, started presenting as my true gender and the proper identity. Even the doctor who I met with said, you're not like any of my other patients. Most of them, they come out, they start presenting as their, you know, as the gender who they are. I says, well, that's not me. And part of the reason why is, I'm trying to be respectful of my wife. And my wife comes out to me and says, I thought it was a phase. And I asked her, well, what changed it? She said, the moment you had to sit there and tell your daughter what was happening, 2 days after my daughter asked me that question, and I had to sit there and look my daughter in the eye, tears coming down my face going, this is who I am. My wife knew right then and there that this wasn't a phase. So we finally got to tell her mom. And so as all of this is going on, I'm finally starting to tell the owner of my company and I'm telling everybody that's going on. And so things were starting to come together. And then my pastor comes to me and says, I'm starting to see that you're being a little bit more visible. I'm going to want you to sit down and talk to the church board. Tell them your story like you did me.
And what was that supposed to accomplish? Did he want you to resign and leave the church?
And I don't really know what he wanted, because here's my wife going to the pastor going, what is this all about? You know, is my spouse going to be on trial? And the pastor goes, well, no, you know, I just want for, you know, your spouse to share the same story that they shared with me. I don't know what the church board's going to do. The worst they could do is ask for you to stay and for your spouse to leave.
I see. So she's okay, but you're not okay.
Correct. But he doesn't know. So as the day got closer, you know, here my pastor and I over conversations and emails, and I'm literally rebutting him every step of the way. You know, there's over the past, I would say, you know, the time from coming out, hormone therapy, everything, you know, starting to wrestle the demons in me. I'm starting to build, being told by one wonderful person, and I had slowly started telling some friends, and I'm starting to get this affirmation going, you are loved, you are cared for. And here's this pastor, the day this happened, says to me, I pray you change your mind.
So God's going to fix it once again and make you, quote, normal. Yep. And that's what he's saying, basically.
And it's basically what he said. I pray you change your mind and just put everything back in the closet where it was and go on like life is normal. So in leading up to this quote-unquote meeting with the board, now, I'm a typical person that can just talk off the top of my head. For the first time in my life, I didn't go that route. Days before, I sat there one night in front of the laptop, and I started writing. And for 5 hours, you know, ADHD didn't kick in. There were no shiny red balls or squirrels or anything like that. I sat there, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. And things came out from my past that I had never even thought of. And I'm trying to type. I'm trying to cry. I'm trying to go through a box of tissues and all of this. And I put these words together. And that pastor person, I reached out to her. I shared with her my words. And she reads this. And she's like, oh, my gosh. How did you put these words together? So when I was asked to talk to the church board, I said, there's one condition. My wife sits there with me. And leading up to this night, my wife and I were torn. We didn't know what to do. Do we stay? Do we leave? Do I sit there and let the people on this church board ask me questions? Do I let them interrogate me? So this would have been, 3 months before. Here's the exact church board I stepped down from.
Yeah, you were on the church board.
I was on the church board. I was asked to step down. And now this group of people who I was once an equal to, I'm having to share this story with them. And I sat there, threw out all my nerves. I read exactly what was going on. And I actually shared this later on, late last year, for the first time, I publicly actually shared the contents of what I wrote. And I sat there and I read it. And I'm watching as I'm reading, I'm watching the reactions. There was one particular person, the look on this person's face, I'm dead across from, the most cold, God awful face I could ever imagine. A couple people scribbling things down. And at the end, I looked at my spouse and we had a hidden paragraph. And I said, we love you all. We have found you people to be wonderful, but we are going to exercise grace and dignity, and we are leaving. I turned to the pastor and said, we are leaving. Please close in prayer. We are done.
Right. So you walked away.
And we walked away at that point. I did not allow a single question. There were some people who had tears coming down their face. There was, oh, we love you. We care for you. This was wonderful. Oh, we wish you wouldn't go. As we're walking out the hallway, someone saying, oh, we need to have lunch. We'll have lunch and we'll talk. The day after, I got an email from the pastor. Oh, I'm so proud of you. That was courage. I'm so grateful. I didn't expect it. And then the paragraph from my wife. Oh, there's still things here at the church you can get involved with.
So she's still welcome, but you're not.
Correct. From that email sent, we have never heard from a single person in that church. And just a few weeks ago, we hit 2 years that we left.
So they ghosted you, basically, despite all the stuff about wanting to get together and have lunch and we'll need to talk later. It never happened.
Right. Here are these group of people. You're the family of God. We shared experience together. People were in our home. We were in their home. We're doing stuff together and all this wonderful things and all this and whatever. We are the family of God. Now, nothing.
Again, I would say unbelievable, but it really isn't, sadly. It's a lot of people just don't know what to do. They don't know what to think, especially Christians, if they've been taught and told like you were, and I was too, that all this gender stuff, it's all black and white. It's all male, female, normal. This is quote unquote the normal thing. They don't know what to do. I'm curious to find out, what would you say to the person who's sitting in that church who, maybe doesn't know anyone from the LGBTQ community, they don't know what to say, they don't know what to do.
My words and thought are, to follow the commandments of Jesus, love your neighbor as yourself, love and love unconditionally. You may not understand. Do you actually think that I would choose to be subjected to discrimination? Do you think that I would choose to actually want the humiliation and everything that I've gone through just because I'm some perverted sexual deviant? And that's actually what this pastor's wife said. Well, that's all everybody's ever just kind of categorized it as. But you know who I am. You know my heart. Do you actually think that this is the type of person who I've always been? Even my former spouse had said to my wife, I've known my former spouse for all my life and I didn't know. I said to my spouse, this is how well I can compartmentalize my life. And I says, throughout all the struggle and through whatever, I have still maintained to be the same person, the same qualities, the same desires. As if you don't understand, ask, grow, learn, understand science, understand it. And to say that, you know, we want the exact same things. And, you know, when it comes to the LGBT community, the thing the church has done for so long is treat people in the LGBT community as verbs rather than nouns. You know, they've been able to label these people as an action, disgusting, horrible. And you see all this stuff of, oh, the gay agenda, the transgender agenda. You know what? If there's one of these agendas, I'd like to know what it is. Maybe I might understand, but you know, what's my agenda? I want to be a good spouse. I want to be a good parent. I want to love those around me, but more than anything, I want to take care of myself. I want to finally understand the person of who I am and actually live to the fullest where I can get over the things that have just caused me so much pain and torment. I tried to pray it away. I tried to do all the things the church wanted. I could say to the people in the church, I played your game. I prayed extra hard. I begged and pleaded and everything imaginable. But yet it was still there. For once, actually believe that this truly, and I said, even I said to this pastor, this is a medical condition. Do you act this way with people who have depression? Do you act this way for someone who's going to have surgery on their knee? No, you don't, because you don't understand something. Why do you have to be afraid of it? So what can I say to the church is that love, no matter what, I am your equal. You are losing more and more people from the church. Because of your actions, you know, the church has lost me. I have no desire to go back to church. I am in what people call this deconstruction of my faith. I don't know what I believe anymore, but yet for some reason, I find it's the only books, the books that I'm reading right now. I'm reading and I'm reading about faith. I'm trying to figure out as this person, this one pastor lady who's kind of guided me through us, all the skills and all my leadership ability that I've learned in all my life has taken place in the church. I don't know what to do with it. But yet, as much as I want to turn my back on the church, I don't want to. And I'm still struggling with things. You know, as much as the people who hear my voice and feel like, well, that person's voice sounds like a guy. No shit, Sherlock. That's what I deal with every point of my life. I deal with the issues. I'm still dealing with the frustration. And so not only am I dealing with my own faith, I'm dealing with the issues of my gender dysphoria. You know, I'm working on certain things in my life to be the best person. The last thing I need is some evangelical person coming down on me, telling me I'm a deviant, I'm depraved, I'm going to go to hell, I'm a disappointment, Genesis 1:27 and all this and whatever. I'm sorry. You're going to sit there and argue scripture with me. I'm going to come right back to your faith and I'm going to tell you that's not what the Bible says. And, you know, we could get into this whole topic of the, you know, the LGBT community and the Bible. But yet, what can I tell these people? That no matter what, if you don't understand, that's okay. Love and love unconditionally. Tribalism within church. Rules and regulations, whatever. That's not what Jesus was about. Jesus didn't sit there and beat people over the head with the Bible. And he didn't put conditions upon people. But yet, the church has.
Why are they so threatened? This is my question. You know, like you said, that I've never thought of it that way. If someone has a medical condition, their knee is hurting and they need surgery, we treat them in the church just like, you know, you're going to have surgery. You need help. So why are they so threatened by someone who's in this process of becoming the person they truly believe they are? Why is that such a threat?
It's fear. A lot of these people are wonderful people, and sometimes I'm very torn. You know, here I am being very outspoken, and I have a lot of people in my world. You know, a lot of people from my background in the Salvation Army who I'm finally starting to build relationships again. And it's hard not to put everybody into the same kettle, because I know the hearts of some of these people. Fear and this twisted ideology that has been drilled. This is drilled into the heads of people for the longest time. It's the us versus them mentality. It's the, you know, the church, you are the prosecuted one. All of these bad, horrible people, the liberals, the gays, the transgenders, you know, look at everything that came out of Roy Moore's mouth during the election. Look at the words from Mike Pence and the Family Research Council and all of this and whatever. It's this, you know, weird, grotesque. They have somehow latched onto this feeling of disgust. And that's all they see. And they feel threatened because this is what they're told to do. They are told to feel threatened. They are told, this is what the Bible says. If you have doubts, if you have questions, you're going to go to hell. You shouldn't doubt. You shouldn't question. This is what it is. They will literally sugarcoat it 12 different ways, find different angles and whatnot. They'll put the straw man theory up. They'll do whatever they can to perpetuate this ideology, to think that the church is under attack. When here I am, 7 of the 8 years that President Obama was president, I hated him. But it took this in my life to realize that, you know, he was a better person than I thought he was. You know, I come to learn that it's not a belief, it's an ideology. It's this mindset that it took. Literally, you know, as Paul's on the road to Damascus and he gets, you know, the old saying is, I got knocked off my horse. Literally, this is what happened. But later on, when Paul was trying to tell people I was changed, nobody believed him. And here are people in the LGBT community who are still holding on to their faith. It was called the Gay Christian Network, and they just changed their name. But yet here are these people are desperately trying to hold on to their faith. You know, people are being called heretics and whatnot. You've got people who are Christians that are turning their back on their own children, who are coming out, who are just rather hold on to this ideology than to say, I'm going to go the path of love instead. And it's sad, Clint. It's absolutely sad that families are being torn apart, lives of people. And, you know, we even talked about conversion therapy. You've got these people who find it that it is okay to shame and guilt and sometimes physical harm against adults and children to convince them of who they are is wrong. You know, you've got, you know, when people just try to talk about gay and lesbian and transgender topics in schools and TVs, you hear, oh, they're trying to indoctrinate. They're trying to cram it down people's throats. And I was like that for years. I was one of those people. And now I'm just trying to say, you know what? If you think it's indoctrination, I think you need to think twice. This is life. This is real life. These are human people. These are people just like you. And I am somebody who, again, I'm a parent. You know, yes, I'm transgender. But the fact of the matter is, it's getting to the point where it's only a small percentage of the person and who I am. I'm a parent. I'm a spouse. I'm a musician. I'm a photographer. I am tediously a lover of music that most people have no idea about. I'm opinionated. I'm boisterous. I'm weird. I'm a writer. I'm all these things. I am more than who you want to think that I am. And, you know, things that you see is happening in North Carolina and whatever, I'm not some threat to your child. In fact, I would be someone who would protect the life of your child probably before the life of my own life. And if I could say to anybody listening is that if this is hard enough on ourselves that we have been brought up, we have this internal struggle, not knowing why the pieces don't fit. And once we finally realize why the pieces have never fit, now we have to face all this external pressure as we try to make matters right. And all we're asking for is to be loved, to be respected. And there's nothing wrong with to be affirmed. You know, and there's these churches out there that are loving and open and affirming. And once I thought they were, you can't do all of these things. Well, maybe it's okay just to tolerate people, but no, to affirm someone is the whole nature of what anybody wants. I want someone to look at me and say, the theology of Mr. Rogers, you are special just the way you are. And if you know in my house, Fred Rogers is a saint. But and as I dig into his life and everything about this man, and I'm about to write an article on him, and I saw some of the quotes, and you know, you make this day special just the way you are. We are all flawed in the eyes of God. If you believe in God, if you don't, and I'm in the point where these days I don't know what I believe if anymore, I'll be honest with you. But the thing is, one of my favorite pastors who I've gotten to know, his name is John Pavlovich. He kind of got me started on my whole reading type of situation. He says, everybody's struggling. Just show some damn grace. That's all we ask for. Just because you don't understand, you know, you're not supposed to judge. Jesus says, why are you looking at the speck in somebody else's eye when you've got some own damn plank in your own? He meant it too. And the fact of the matter is we're all flawed. We're not perfect. You want to judge me? I guess I should worship who you are, because truly you are without sin. And it takes some time. If you get to, you know, a lot of these people in the church who are so horrible to those in the LGBT community, it's because they really have yet to understand people like myself, or people who are gay, or people who are bisexual, or people who are genderqueer. I feel that once you get to know somebody, and that's one of the things in my own life, I've actually had people come to me in my life. I just had a friend to me come the other day and say, my child just came out to me as transgender. I have been watching you and what you've been going through and the message that you've been sharing. Or my own customers to say to me, you are the first person in my life who is transgender. And for me, as much as I have spent all my life running from, I'm tired of being the example, I'm finding now what an opportunity. So it's hard not to be angry. And I came to a point where instead of defending myself to all these online trolls, I'm going to live my life. I want people to see I am happy. And if I'm happy, they're going to see that this was the best decision that she could have ever made in her life. My spouse tells me, you are more patient, you are more kind, you are more tolerant, you are more understanding. And that means the world to me. And for those of you who fall within the LGBT community and listen to this, you are not alone. And as Gloria told me, this is that woman, the female pastor who's been wonderful. Why do you feel bad? Why do you feel guilt? You have done nothing wrong. You are as God designed. You are fearfully, you are wonderfully made. And you are the light in somebody else's path. And through all the hurt, through all the deconstruction that I'm going through, it is amazing how much strength somehow has managed to come out throughout all of this. And I hope that something of what I've said tends to resonate in the life of somebody else. And, you know, if somebody has questions, don't be afraid to ask. Instead of judge, ask a damn question. You'd be surprised what type of an answer you'd get.
Well, thank you so much. This has been an absolutely amazing, heartwarming, heart-rending, too, discussion. I mean, I'm so glad that you are open about what your struggles have been, where you're at now. I mean, it's just been an absolutely amazing journey. I'm glad that we got to go on at least part of it with you. Thank you so much, Dana, for being on this podcast.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for the time. I know it's been a little long, but I think because of the nature of the topic, I think at times where, I don't think times, sometimes can be really tracked.
No, this has been great. I'm so glad that you were part of this show. I really do.
And you are more than wonderful. For those who are interested into kind of to learn a little bit more, and you know, some of the disjointed words that I put together. My online presence is my name, and if you want to put this in the show notes, it's danastimson.com. And as time, you know, every so often I put another article out there. Sometimes I deal with my own past, and some of the things we've talked about, I've actually kind of written down, and you know, Clint, you've had an opportunity to read it, but if someone really wants to kind of learn more, please, by all means, you know, stop and, you know, check out my writing. Twitter, I'm at Whistler. I'm sometimes more political than whatever. If you can kind of get through sometimes, you know, the language and get to the heart of the matter, by all means, don't be afraid to check it out.
Thanks for coming along with me and Dana on this journey this week and last week. I hope that it's been challenging, thought-provoking, stimulating. As I said in the introduction, if nothing else, you've been able to sit down, as it were, across from that metaphorical table and just listen in to someone's story, someone's account, their narrative of their experiences. But you know what? As we said before, on just a purely human level, what do people want? We want love. We want acceptance. We want to feel valued. And then you start throwing in things like the church and the theology behind it. You wonder, how could the church, of which Dana and her spouse were members, how could they have handled it differently? How could they have done it in such a way that didn't alienate both of them? And I think this is one thing that people looking at the church from the outside in, as Dana pointed out, there's seemingly this disconnect between what they proclaim, the love of Jesus and all the rest of it, and yet what we heard in Dana's story was seemingly the exact opposite of that. Her spouse could stay because she was quote-unquote normal, but Dana really wasn't going to be allowed to stay in the church, or certainly not to be able to stay in any sort of leadership positions. And of course, this isn't the same story for everybody. There are churches out there that are inclusive and everything else, but in her case, it seems to be a message of, you're no longer valued in our church because of your new gender, your new transition. You're not going to be allowed to be a part of this thing. And so they walked away from all of it. Now, one thing I wanted to say is really interesting is that on Dana's website, danastimson.com, you can actually read the full transcript of the letter that she read to the board. So if you're interested in finding out what exactly Dana said, then you can go to her website and check that out. Also, as I mentioned too, you can get a hold of me a couple different ways. Probably the best way to follow me on Twitter at MindShift2018. And as I mentioned before, I'll put in the show notes the other ways you can contact me, as well as Dana's Twitter handle. I just want to say real quick before I let you go that coming up in the next 3 weeks, we're going to go back into the world of the faithless feminist. We're going to hear next week and the week after that from two African-American women who contributed a chapter to Karen Garst's new book that's coming out soon. We're going to hear next week from Valerie Wade and the week after that from Deanna Adams. They are going to be bringing their perspective as African-American women on the history of the slave trade, the Jim Crow laws, the civil rights movement, African-American women preachers, African-American atheists. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss these episodes. And then following Valerie and Deanna, we're going to be bringing Karen Garst back to talk about her new book. So that's coming up over the next 3 weeks. So be sure and stay tuned for all that coming up right here on Mindshift Podcast.